everybody. Welcome to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. How's it going, Nick?
It's going good. How are you?
Pretty good. Something I thought that was kind of interesting recently. I was Googling learning Japanese, partially just to see what the search results were, and also to see if our podcast would come up in the search results. And actually, they did come up in the search results, some of the YouTube videos and links to the actual podcast. So I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks to all our wonderful listeners, right?
Yeah.
All seven of you. But something that really surprised me when I was going through these results were different resources. For example, different tables, different image files that people had created. And I thought, oh, that looks kind of interesting. I'll have a look at that. And I was really, really shocked. Just, for example, some of the anatomy questions they had, for example, leg, arm, fingers, you know, chest, all things like that. Very simple Japanese words that you could easily look up in a dictionary, but the results were just terrible. Like, the English was, of course, correct, but what they had written in Japanese, I'll just give you one example. I don't want to rant too much about this, but for arms, it had buki.
Which means weapon or weapons.
Yes, exactly. So yes, they are arms, as in armed forces, but I was just really surprised. And this was just one example. There were many other examples similar to this. And I was really shocked to see that there are a lot of people with no experience, or very little experience, I should say, and very little know-how or knowledge to produce resources that are actually producing these resources. Yeah, so for today, that was kind of a long intro, but I would like to talk about methods, and how these resources relate to methods, and different ways that people may study.
Yeah.
Okay, so how about, let's talk about some guidelines. What if you have any guidelines for different study methods, what would you suggest?
Yeah, well, I think a guideline for me is pretty much just to do whatever I like as long as it's in Japanese. Do you have a guideline like that?
That would be my only guideline, actually. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, long as it's Japanese, made by Japanese people.
For Japanese people.
Yeah, exactly. I just think, regardless of what you're studying, as long as you're looking at native materials, I think you're going to be safe. It's just much, much more beneficial.
And that includes anime and dramas and manga. Does that include all of those for you?
Everything, yeah.
Yeah.
I think at the beginning it may be hard because you might not have the vocabulary. And building that initial vocabulary, I think you don't have to use Japanese-only materials then, but ideally, you want to just get some basic vocabulary and then, as quickly as possible, move towards Japanese-only resources, like Japanese, like native Japanese materials. The earlier you do that, I think you're just minimizing the damage that English could do onto your Japanese.
Yeah, people say much the same thing with the relying on gomaji compared to upgrading to actual Japanese characters like hiragana or katakana or kanji.
Yeah.
People say it's better to get out of romaji as quick as possible, and yeah, I would agree with you that it's it's similarly a really good idea to get out of English resources, or rather, I should say, resources made by English speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Besides doing things in Japanese and using Japanese resources, I also think, and this is hard to do because, you know, I want to be an adult and I want to be interested in adult things, but I think it's important to be reasonable as well. And when I say that, I mean to be considerate of what your current Japanese level is and not try and reach too far. I actually think if you really, really, really want to read the newspaper, for example, and you're a beginner in Japanese and you really want to read the Japanese newspaper, then you can. But I think it's important to be aware that the learning curve will be enormous. Yeah, so if you're always reading the paper in your native language, and you really want to read the paper in Japanese, yeah, it's just going to be very, very, very difficult, probably for a very long time. And so if you can fight that constant disappointment for probably quite a few years, then at the end of those few years, you'll probably be able to read the paper really, really good. And of course, your Japanese would have improved a lot, and you'll be doing what, you know, you always wanted to do. But for me personally, I just couldn't handle the rejection. And so I started, you know, just picking and choosing some simpler resources for myself. Like I've said before on this podcast, I often read kids' books. And I remember when I first got really serious about learning Japanese, I went to the library in Japan and I would actually get storybooks for kids. And I'd borrow maybe 5 of them, and I'd sit down and I would just look at those. And it seems a bit embarrassing, but you know, I was trying my best, and that was essentially figured out that was my level. And so I was just there, and I learned a lot of words that way. And then I upgraded slowly to very short novels, and now I'm reading more regular length novels and watching regular TV shows and whatnot. How about you? Would you have that same advice?
Yeah, basically. I think you just have to be aware of your level. You were saying that maybe you could try and read the newspaper, but for me, I'm all about conserving my resources. Rather than being a beginner, trying to read the newspaper and looking up every word in the newspaper and then just maybe writing a definition or trying to remember what each word is, word for word, I would rather just come back to it later. I would choose something much closer to my level. Swallow your pride and just read a kid's book. Read a book that was meant for, you know, 3-year-old kids or 4-year-old kids. Yeah, it's not going to be the best story, but you're going to be able to understand it. Just continue reading a lot of books like that, and then gradually, as your vocabulary improves and your comprehension improves, just level up.
Yeah. I mean, I remember getting a kick out of being able to read my first storybook, you know, probably made for a mother reading to their child. When I could read the first storybook without looking up a single word in the dictionary, I remember the thrill of that. And it seems so kind of embarrassing now. But now I'm watching shows that I would typically, you know, in the English world, I would like, such as Uchu Kyodai. But yeah, it's been a long process, and I don't think it would have been a smart idea back when I was a beginner to start watching Uchu Kyodai, you know, in Japanese without English subtitles or whatever. And just, you know, it would have just been too hard. I just would have been suffering too much.
Are you for or against subtitles?
English subtitles?
Yeah, English subtitles on Japanese content.
I'm personally against them. I know that you have used them a lot in the past, but as far as I can see, you're the only person I know of who has been able to use English subtitles when watching a Japanese show and still get a lot of benefit from the constant exposure to the Japanese. I think what's more common, and certainly what happened to me, is I would just end up reading it and the listening would sort of, over time, you could almost feel it, like I was becoming more and more detached from the actual Japanese, and all I was doing instead was reading the English. And I still watch shows most of the time with Japanese subtitles, and I still rely on Japanese subtitles more than I would like, but at least I'm getting reading practice, and I'm slowly sort of weaning my way off it.
Yeah, the main way that I use subtitles was when I was listening to a long dialogue. Every now and then there would be a word that I didn't understand, and the Japanese word that I didn't understand, I would usually look at the subtitles for, you know, a harder word, and that was the main way that I used it.
Yeah. Well, that requires a certain kind of focus, which, I mean, maybe I'm just too weak to do that. I think I would just end up reading it. You know, like I wouldn't be able to train my eyes not to be constantly looking down at the subtitles.
Yeah.
Another handy. What was it? Another. What was your terminology?
Guideline.
Another guideline that I personally think is really important is just exposure. Just to expose yourself, the more the better. Just keep on exposing. Just really get dirty with it. I mean, just get muddy and filthy. Learning another language is kind of like just a big, giant mud wrestle. You know, you're just covered in mud, you're dirty, and occasionally you'll find little gems, but a lot of it is just being there in the mud, you know, slipping around, trying to make things work, and I think you'll just get more and more comfortable with that process, and you'll get more and more used to you know, that sort of experience. And I think through that massive exposure, your brain starts to figure it all out. I think there is a bit of a focus. People tend to be very focused on the idea of conscious effort all the time. But I think, you know, those people are maybe relying on their own conscious mind a bit too much. I think the conscious mind is only a small fraction of what our brain actually is. I just think that the way that you learn a language and the way that you learn almost anything, just like driving a car, is the first time you do it or the first 10 times you do it, you are out on the road, and you're very conscious of everything that's going on. You see, there's a car over there, there's a car there, check my rear windscreen. And you can see this with new drivers, you know. They're always kind of very consciously, now I'm going to check this mirror, I'm going to check this mirror, I'm going to, you know, and whatever. And then they get worried whenever anything changes. But for more competent drivers and people who have been driving more, and this is the same for Japanese, your body adjusts to the various changes and differences in the flow of the experience, and it adjusts, and it essentially gets pushed more and more deeper and deeper down into your unconscious mind. And so the ideal of learning a language, and the ideal of if you want to be a tennis player or if you want to be a great driver or whatever, is to essentially get more information out of your conscious mind and into your unconscious mind, into that sort of reflex area. And so I just think that this focus on really, really pushing a method, on really, really on trying to find a holy grail, as it were, or of trying to find a Rosetta Stone that will like be this amazing thing to decipher the whole language, and you'll just be able to read this thing and the whole of the language will pop into your mind like a miracle drug or something like that. I mean, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but I just really think that sort of thing doesn't exist, and that the analogy, a better analogy, is more like just rolling around in the mud, you know, and you're just trying to figure it out as you go.
Yeah, I think to get to that advanced stage, whether it be a driver or a tennis player or a language speaker, it's just exposure, like you say, getting that input, getting a lot of input as much as you can, and whether it be through books, listening, reading, or anything, a lot of input is really important. And I think it's important to not worry about the output at all. Just keep getting the input until you're ready for the output.
Yeah. And I think that point about not worrying about output is a really interesting one, because it's an unfortunate thing about societies in general that performance is really just so important, that it's expected, for instance, in a classroom, that you can speak pretty much as soon as you have heard something, that you would hear it once, and then you'll be able to essentially just be able to use perfectly whatever you just learnt. I mean, even just when I was back learning Japanese in university, the expectation would be that when we learn how to say, may I use the bathroom, or may I go to the bathroom, may I whatever, that we would be able to use that grammar from then on whenever we would need it. And I just don't think that's the way that it works at all. I think in the situation of a child growing up in an environment, they probably hear people talking about going to the bathroom hundreds upon thousands of times before they are able to, you know, to properly use their mouth to get the words out, and also, you know, to put the words in the right order, etc., etc., etc. I mean, it's been proven by a lot of research too that little kids are even at extremely young ages, they're getting, even if they can't speak very well, they're very, very good at understanding the way and like the rules of the language. They've done experiments in which, for instance, a kid is able to put things into past tense or into present progressive, as in ing tense, and all that sort of thing. And they're able to do that with words, which aren't actually real words, even if their speaking ability in other ways aren't actually great. So there's a lot of assimilating of different things going on every time you're watching a Japanese drama, every time you're watching an anime. And I don't claim to understand all of those things are, but I just think that instead of putting all of, you know, your faith into a conscious process of always thinking about all the different things that are going on, I think it's much easier, it's much more freeing to just let yourself off a little bit and think, well, I'm consciously focusing on this part, but, you know, just rest knowing that more is actually going in, which is, I think, a really great thing, that our brains aren't making conscious every single little part that's going on in our bodies at all time. I mean, it would be exhausting, and, you know, we wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, there's no doubt that this unconscious learning, as you're saying, is a more effective way in terms of quality. But how about if we compare them in terms of time? What do you think would be more efficient for an adult, or just better in terms of time, or more useful, if you're comparing methods like just getting a lot of exposure or just memorizing a sentence and then, you know, saying that sentence or repeating it over and over? What do you think would be more useful?
Well, I personally think the former would be more useful. The process of sinking it in eventually through your conscious into your unconscious mind. I think the problem with the second, with the latter, is that it just becomes regurgitation. And the second that there is no need anymore to regurgitate the information quickly slips out of your mind. I mean, I think there's been a lot of studies to suggest that we're, as humans, we're only able to juggle sort of two or three or four things at once. And, you know, if you have a number in mind, like a girl's phone number, for example, and then, you know, something happens outside and a drunk guy falls over and, you know, spills a bag of oranges, and it's kind of hilarious, and then... You will suddenly realize that you've kind of forgotten half of the numbers. I just don't think, I don't think our conscious mind is very good at holding on to information. It's part of the problem, in my opinion, of what happens in schools, even in Japanese schools, that there's this, you know, is this sort of pummeling of new information all the time, but there isn't time to let each part sink in. There isn't enough revision going on to let each part sink in, because of course you need to get onto the next grammar and turn onto the next grammar, and a little bit is going in at each time, but it's sort of it doesn't seem like the teachers are going through so much effort. It just doesn't seem as though what's actually going in really is, seems to be matching the effort that the teachers are going through.
Yeah, I've used both methods, and with the latter, just trying to memorize a few sentences and just, you know, trying to use it in the right situation, it just doesn't work. I've never really done that with Japanese, but I go to Korea about once or twice a year, and I always try to get a few sentences, you know, in my memory before I go. And I'm using this method, just rote memorization, and I have very little exposure to the Korean language, like, that I should be watching. Like, I watch dramas, Korean dramas, with Japanese subtitles. I think if I were to watch Korean cartoons that little kids watch, or, you know, like toddlers watch, I think I would be able to communicate a bit better when I go to Korea. Even though I may sound like a toddler, I would actually be able to produce something. Because the way it is now, when I get there, I can't say anything other than, you know, thank you, or like, yeah, that's it, just thank you, or hello.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate, because I've invested more than 10 minutes into this language. You know, I've studied, you know, at least a couple hours, and I do that every time I go. You know, I study for a couple hours, brush up on things, but when I get there, it's just gone. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, because our brain doesn't really seem to care about something that we know that isn't going to be around for long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't really care about new information unless it can determine that this new information is pertinent and interesting to it in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to be kind of almost like convincing it every day, or convincing it often, that, hey, you know, this is good information. You should be taking all this in because you're going to be using this. And I think that the constant need for, you know, everyone says, oh, like, I was learning a language, and then I was studying it for 4 years or something like that, and then I stopped studying, and 2 years later I can't remember a single word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think our brain wants to get rid of information because it wants to, you know, it's just adapting to whatever is actually happening on a day-to-day basis. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate that you can't really learn as much as you would like to in Korean or anything else in such a short time. But it's just it's kind of a time-saving thing that our brain does.
Yeah, it's just, you know, managing its resources efficiently.
Yeah, I think essentially it's like an arrow, if you will. It's sort of like, it's an arrow. Your conscious mind is like an arrow that points to information for your unconscious mind to get to work on. It's like a CEO in a company, you know, it kind of occasionally checks in, but otherwise it leaves most things to the other departments.
What would you recommend as the ideal exposure for beginners, or the ideal direction that beginners should take?
Well, that's a very difficult question. I'm a little bit uncertain myself. A little part of me thinks that studying kanji would be a great idea to really get in the thick of studying kanji. Another part of me thinks maybe not, maybe try and focus more on TV shows made for kids and whatnot. Maybe you have a more certain viewpoint on the issue. What do you think?
I think, yeah, definitely get like a vocabulary book, and maybe you could do like some Anki reps with basic vocabulary, and that should be part of your diet. And the other part of your diet should be like a lot of kids shows, and hopefully the words that you've learned in the vocab you'll see or hear on the show. Yeah, just continue to learn vocab, study words, and just watch a lot of TV shows. Yeah, ideally something close to your Japanese level. Like, you shouldn't be watching, like, CSI in Japanese when you don't even know how to say thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, just like, I think the very early steps, you'll be, you just might be picking up on the exclamations that people make, you know, the things that they yell out just before they get attacked by a dragon or something. And then, you know, then you'll start to pick up on where the names are falling in the sentence and all these other things. You'll start to pick up on more of the structure of how things are going and little things like how a joke is working in the show and how timing is being used to better carry dramatic effect and all these sorts of things. I think you, even if you're not picking up necessarily on words, watching, you know, things for kids shows will really help in other areas, which are all extremely important for language learning. You know, it's not just words and kanji. There's also, you know, all these other aspects too to sound more natural.
Yeah, becoming culturally Japanese is really important too. So I think just getting used to the culture or the way people interact together, which you can only get through a show, I think, or through authentic interaction. But if you're studying Japanese from outside of Japan, you're probably not going to have a chance for that. So ideally, you know, TV shows, you can get a lot. Not just the language, but you get the culture and the interactions. There's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Another thing, too, just briefly, is it's part of the reason, too, why so many websites out there, so many services out there which are claiming to get you speaking fluent Japanese in 6 months or
yeah,
whatever.
Learn kanji in 2 months.
Yeah, this is, yeah, it's why they're so evil. Because just by simple nature of the way that the brain works, that's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it takes a long time and a lot of exposure to get those things past your conscious mind into your unconscious mind to be able to recall at any moment in a kind of instantaneous way. And it's certainly longer than 2 months, and it's certainly more than 2 months' worth of exposure to resources, especially if those resources, as a lot of these websites are claiming, are in mostly English anyway. I mean, yeah, so you might be able to say some basic sentences, but there's no way that if you use these resources for the 2 months or the 6 months that it's allocating, that you're going to be able to understand anything outside of those sentences which you've understood, which you've, you know, come to terms with. So it's a terrible situation, actually, where if you, okay, you know how to say where's the library, but it doesn't get you anywhere if you can't understand the directions.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's an awful thing that those websites are doing and those services out there are doing, trying to claim that you can do something that quickly. It's just not possible. I mean, it's like you said in a previous podcast, Derek, that kids will go through a process of learning kanji in school for years and years and still come out with a shaky knowledge on a lot of kanji.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is absurd to think that someone can go in and learn all the kanji in 6 months. And don't believe anybody who tries to tell you, I mean, without exception, don't believe anybody who tries to tell you otherwise.
Yeah, it's just, it's really sad that people say things like that. Because, you know, I think a lot of people, they get really hopeful when they see those posts like, oh, wow, I can learn Japanese in 6 months for only $29.99 a month. I should really sign up for this. You know, maybe it's going to help you improve your Japanese, but I think there are other ways that you could probably improve your Japanese for free. I think just if you could take any two pieces of advice from this episode, it would be wary of your resources, unless they're Japanese, native Japanese. And two, just get a lot of exposure. Anything to add to that?
Be reasonable.
Yeah, that's another good one. Yeah. So, there you have it, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Guys Learning Japanese. Okay, thanks for listening to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. Send your questions to glj@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions on the show.